Opinion. The next case is 07-896, Knickerbocker Properties, Inc. versus Delaware County Board of Revision. Mr. Sykes.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, my name is Todd Sleggs, and I represent the appellant Knickerbocker Properties Incorporated in this appeal. This is a 2003, sorry about that. This is a 2003 tax year appeal arising out of a decision of the Delaware County Board of Revision that we appealed to the Ohio
Board of Tax. Mr. Sleggs, I can't hear you.
I'm sorry. I'll just try and lean in a little bit. This is a 2003 tax year appeal that arises from a decision of the Delaware County Board of Revision that the appellant appealed to the Ohio Board of Tax Appeals. And the issue in this case is the fact that we did not receive notice of the hearing before the Delaware County Board of Revision. The record in this case shows that the property that's at issue in this appeal sold on to my client on December 29th of 2003, and the Appalachian Board of Education filed a complaint to increase the assessment based upon that sale. Now, the deed and the conveyance fee statement that were filed in connection with that transfer of the property clearly show the address of the appellant as being the Avenue of America's New York, New York address that is shown not only as the grantee's address, it's also shown as the tax mailing address on the conveyance fee statement and deed. That address was not used for any of the notices in this case. The only time it was used was 9 months after the Board of Revision issued their first decision. A decision was mailed to my client at the New York address. Prior to that time, all of the notices in this case went to the seller, the e-property address in Scottsdale, Arizona. And the reason that we're here is that we did not have a chance to participate in the proceeding before the Delaware County Board of Revision. The rule that we're requesting that this court adopt is that the mailing address of the grantee shall be used for notice to the property owner under the revised code sections that are discussed in the brief. In the absence of a written request for a change in the mailing address under revised code 323.13 addressed to the county auditor. And we feel that the fact that the school board did not use the address in the conveyance fee statement and the deed in their complaint led to the procedural inefficiencies in the case that we discuss in our brief. The fact that we did not receive notice and the fact that the proceeding went forward with the repeated erroneous notices going to the seller of the property.
Yeah, the duty here is on the auditor, is it not?
The auditor, Your Honor, is charged as secretary of the Board of Revision to issue the various notices under the statute.
And it's that person's duty to send a notice to the proper address of the person who's not seeking the change.
That's correct, Your Honor. And there are a number, you know, as you read through the statute, and we discuss them in the brief, I mean, there are a number of safeguards which really demonstrate the importance of the property owner getting notice. I mean, they get a notice of the initial filing of the complaint. They're given an opportunity to counterfile, and then they're required to get certified notice 10 days before the hearing. And then in 57-15-12, the county board is not allowed to increase the assessment unless the property owner is given not notice and an opportunity to be heard. So we feel that the legislative intent is very clear that notice to the property owner is very important. Now, we feel that it's important that the court be aware that the courts address this issue in some other cases, and the fact that there was a significant delay in us ultimately receiving notice of this proceeding, caused us to lose our right to have the seller actually pay the tax increase for the calendar year 2003. I mean, they owned the property until December 29th of 2003, and under the contract, we had 9 months post-closing to go back and have the seller pay any increase in the 2003 taxes. And if we had received the notices in the time period that the erroneous notices were set out, we still would have had the right to go back and have the seller pay the taxes. So we've really been harmed by the lack of notice in this case. The last point that I'd like to address with the court is the Board of Tax Appeals order, where they discuss that any prejudice to us is eliminated by the fact that we had a right of appeal to the Board of Tax Appeals. And I think it's important for the court to recognize that the burden was shifted to us when we took an appeal to the Board of Tax Appeals. We never had an opportunity to rebut the school board's evidence at the Board of Revision level. And so when the Board of Tax Appeals says, you know, any procedural, you know, irregularities below are cured by the fact that you can take an appeal to the Board of Tax Appeals, really ignores the fact that the burden had shifted to us. The assessment had been increased, and we would have had to not only rebut the sale, but come forward with appraisal evidence and an appeal before the Board of Tax Appeals. So we don't feel that the remedy that was offered by the Board of Tax Appeals and their decision and order is an adequate one in this case.
The Board of Tax Appeals, I think, hears these cases de novo, essentially, doesn't it? I mean, it can take whatever evidence it wants, and the argument is that the board's obviously view was we can give you the hearing that give the property owner the hearing that you didn't receive at the Board of Review. That's not enough.
Well, Your Honor, it's interesting. I did cite a couple of cases that the board decided after I appealed this case to the court, and it's the Galleon case and the Cabot case. And I think they understood, you know, I'd like to think that I might have enlightened them a little bit, but they started remanding cases like this where the property owner wasn't given a hearing. And I think it really kind of short circuits the statutory scheme when you're supposed to get a hearing at the local level, and then, you know, based upon their decision and their review of the record, then you take an appeal to the Board of Tax Appeals. But you are correct, they do have the right to review a case de novo. In the Galleon and the Cabot cases, though, they did recognize the fact that we do have what I call the preclusionary rule in Ohio, which is 5715.19G of the revised code, that says if you have something in your knowledge and possession and you don't present it at the Board of Revision, you're precluded from presenting it on appeal. And so I think that may have been the concern based upon the Galleon cases and the Cabot cases, because the board does discuss the preclusionary rule as one of the reasons why they sent the cases back down to the Board of Revision.
What outcome do you feel is appropriate?
Well, based upon the facts in this case, Your Honor, and the fact that we weren't able to take advantage of the 9-month post-closing proration language in the purchase agreement, we feel that the underlying complaint should be dismissed because of the fact that the error in the complaint, the fact that it didn't have the proper address, really led to all the procedural efficiencies in the proceeding below that caused the delay that we had to deal with.
So going back to the Board of Revision still leaves your client harmed to the extent of the increase. Presumably, if it went back there, they're going to lay out the purchase price and you end up with the same result in terms of the taxes, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
But you can't recover.
We anymore. Can't recover from the seller because the 9-month post-closing proration period had run. And if we had gotten the notices, I mean, the initial notices went out in April. The first hearing was set for May 11th. Now, we did get a letter from the seller saying, you know, here's the notice that the county sent to us, and my client requested a postponement of the hearing. But then when they rescheduled it in September of 2004, the notices again went to the seller, and we didn't get those notices. And then the decision came out on September 29th of 2004, which, interestingly enough, would have been the last day of that nine-month reproration period. So we don't feel that remanding would be an adequate remedy.
The seller might have had less motivation to send those notices knowing the 9 months was ticking.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I'm not, you know, they obviously sent us the first one, and they may have had a motive. I'm not aware of that. But we would have avoided all that if the proper address, again, the grantee's address in the conveyance fee statement and deed that served as the basis for the complaint in this case were used. We wouldn't have had any of the notice issues that are discussed in this case. And the court has recognized that a county board of revision cannot cure a defect in a complaint by having a rehearing. I mean, that issue has been before the court before in the Cincinnati School District Board of Education case that the Board of Education cited in their brief before the Board of Tax Appeals. So we don't believe that reversing and remanding this case back down to the Delaware County Board of Revision for a rehearing is appropriate based upon the facts.
Mr. Sleggs, what is the amount that we're talking about, the increase for 2003?
The amount for 2003, I'm just using a 2% tax rate. The assessment increased from a market value of $21,631,830 to $27,605,000, which by my calculations, about $120,000 a year. And the tax year 2003 was the second year of an update triennial, so the valuation would carry forward to 2004 as well. So based upon the law and the facts in this case, we're requesting that the court reverse the decision and order of the Board of Tax Appeals and reverse and remand the case to the Board of Revision with instructions to dismiss the underlying complaint and reinstate the county auditor's value. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sleggs. Mr. Rich.
May it please the court, Jeffrey Rich on behalf of the Olentangy Local Schools. With me is my co-counsel in this, Assistant County Prosecutor Christopher Betts of the Delaware County Prosecutor's Office, and I will be arguing on behalf of the appellees. This is the first time I've ever heard of a de novo hearing before the Supreme Court in a BTA case. There is no evidence about who's going to pay the tax. This is the first time we ever heard it. The only evidence in this case came before you today about that. Never before, because they waived hearing, as the Chief Justice indicated. They had a right to a de novo hearing. They could have explained at the de novo hearing why maybe the sale wasn't a good sale. What was the correct address? We don't know. There is no evidence that the address that the school board put on its complaint, which was the address on the tax duplicate at the time the complaint was prepared, was not the correct address. What we do know, and what
well, what do you mean you don't know? What do you mean you don't know? The documents filed at the courthouse showing the transaction show the correct address of the purchaser. Now, if somebody who knows what they're doing goes to the courthouse and looks at those documents, when you file this, Mr. Rich, you would file it and send it to the right place.
We don't send anything to anybody. The auditor does that. We attach to the complaint those documents about which
well,
you
what,
spoke.
Well, what did you... You filed something with the auditor
we
to start
file
this.
We filed a complaint as to the assessment of value.
Okay,
attached
and
to that
and,
complaint is a copy of the conveyance fee and the deed, both with that New York address. But we checked the tax duplicate to see where the tax bill is to be mailed, and the tax bill was to be mailed to a Scottsdale address. So we put that address as well on the complaint. And then when the notice of hearing was sent, they sent a letter from the appellee saying, please continue that hearing. There's no evidence in the record that we had the wrong address. We had both addresses, so one of them must have been right, and we know they made an appearance by filing a letter to the Board of Revision saying, please continue the hearing. At no time did they write and say, oh, and by the way, how about sending us a notice at a different address? Not at all. So there is no evidence. Today we had our first evidence about this contract or something and about where it should have gone. They could have presented that evidence in a de novo hearing. They didn't. What we have is an arm's length sale for $27 million.
Now, the contract as to who pays, What relevance? Why would you present that?
I didn't present it. He presented it. There's no contract in evidence.
But there wouldn't be any hearing where they would present that. He's making an argument without any evidence, as you point out, about the impact. But that is really of no relevance at the Board of Revision, is it?
No, not whatsoever.
As to the proper valuation on the property.
I fully agree with you, Justice Pfeiffer. Absolutely no. So, first of all, property owner is attempting then to defeat the requirements of 571303 and the Berea case and its progeny, which require arm's-length sales to be market value for tax purposes, by developing this spurious argument that somehow, even though we had both a Scottsdale address and a New York address, and somehow the auditor sent a notice to the taxpayer, who then sent a notice saying, could you please continue the hearing, that you ought to throw the case out. There's absolutely no evidence that that is correct. Moreover, there is nothing in 571519 that requires which address ought to be used, the tax mailing address or the street address. And let me tell you why that's important. 95% of the homeowners who file complaints, they don't put down as the address, the tax mailing address on their conveyance fee, which may be a mortgage company or a bank. They put their home address. Would all those cases now have to be dismissed because they didn't put down the conveyance fee address? Moreover, those conveyance fee addresses change regularly. What happens when you refinance and your bill goes somewhere else? That would be untenable. You could not do that. The auditor generally looks at the tax duplicate, sends his notices or her notices to the tax duplicate notice where the bills go, and then the owner or a representative comes to the Board of Revision hearing.
Would your argument be different if this went to the seller and the seller didn't forward it and they never got notice? Would your argument be the same?
It would be the same. If the auditor sent the notice to the wrong place, as one of the justices mentioned, it could be remanded and started over. But they had a de novo hearing anyway. They had the right to a de novo hearing. The auditor can't throw our complaint out.
You're talking about de novo at the Court of Appeals.
At the Board of Tax Appeals.
How do you deal with the issue that the burden of proof then shifts? And that is really a de novo hearing, but now they have a burden of proof, so they really are disadvantaged.
No, not at all, because when we filed our complaint, we attached to it the real property conveyance fee statement of value and the deed, which automatically suggests a rebuttable presumption that we have an arm's length sale. The burden shifted to them at the Board of Revision anyway, so it's the same place it would have been. Once we file the complaint and show that there was a sale, then they have to come in and say, well, this really wasn't a sale. My grandmother gave it to me or something like that. So the burden is exactly the same at the BTA as it would have been at the Board of Revision because the evidence was the same. So there's nothing in the law that really clarifies and says what address the auditor ought to use when sending out the notices.
Is this left then to the discretion of the county auditor to utilize either the tax mailing address or the property address or some other address that might be contained there?
There is nothing specific in the statute. My experience is they generally use the tax mailing address. It doesn't say in the statute tax mailing address or address on the complaint or whatever. It says to notify the owner of the property. And if they can't find him, they notify him by publication.
What is the legal significance of the address that the complainant puts on the complaint for the reassessment?
Generally, that is the one that they will notify the party. For example, as I said, homeowners, they usually put their home address. They don't put the mortgage company. That's where they send the notice. Homeowner says, I want my house value lowered. They'll send the notice to them.
Your point is that the Scottsdale address was on the complaint form. The notice went there, and then that notice was responded to and forwarded to the New York address. Am I right about that?
The letter that the BOR got was from New York.
Yes.
Asking for a continuance. We still don't know, because there's been no evidence, whether the Scottsdale address was correct or whether the New York address was correct, but we do know that both addresses were a part of the complaint that was filed.
And we do know that the auditor sent it to Arizona, but the request for the continuance came from New York.
That appears from the record, the transcript that you have, the statutory transcript.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So in any event, the complaint that we filed set forth all of these potential addresses. A hearing was waived, so we really have no evidence whatsoever on what should have been the correct address. And therefore, their arguments are somewhat disingenuous. I mean, if they really felt they had arguments to make, they could have had that hearing, they could have presented the evidence, they could have tried to convince the Board of Tax Appeals the sale wasn't good or that the service wasn't good upon them, and yet, and where it should have gone.
Well, Mr. Rich, Mr. Rich, my take, based on what limited evidence we have, is if we reversed and remanded it back to the Board of Review, the outcome for your client is likely to be the same as it is now. The principal result, and I think the principal concern we have, is making it clear that property owners should receive a notice at the appropriate address. So that's really not too much harm to your client to suffer, is it? If the bottom line to your client is still going to end up being the same, and we write something that gives some more guidance to the auditors to be careful to make sure that homeowners and others, property owners, get an appropriate notice, that's not a bad outcome, is it?
No, we want property owners to get notice. We want proper notice. The point is, they could have had a hearing and told us on the record that we didn't get proper notice. Instead, the record only shows that they got notice and asked for a continuance and didn't show up. That's what the record shows. That's why this is probably not the appropriate case to remand, just on the testimony of counsel before the Supreme Court. If there would have been clear, and we have those, there certainly are, where they don't get a certified card back and the Board of Revision goes forward with the hearing anyway, and then at the Board of Tax Appeals, the parties yell, I never got notice. There's no record of notice in the file whatsoever. That's why I didn't respond and show up, and I've got a defense. Absolutely, we'd want to have it remanded. We want people to have a fair chance. That's what the judicial system's about. I'm not sure this is the case for that, because there's no evidence of such. So this is a case where the BTA decision was both reasonable and lawful, and we would ask this honorable court to affirm that decision. If there's no further questions, I will allow my opposing counsel to make his rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rich. Mr. Skaggs, you saved a little more than 3 minutes of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to be clear. You've got in the record this transcript from the Delaware County Board of Revision, and Mr. Rich made reference to green cards. The only green cards and certified notices that are in the record are the certified receipt and the green card to e-property tax of the June 24th decision, and the green card and the certified mail receipt of the June 30th, 2005 Board of Revision decision 9 months later. There's no evidence that even e-property tax got the hearing notice for that September 1st, 2004 hearing. So there's no evidence in the record that anybody got notice of that September 1st hearing. So when you look at the Board of Revision transcript, it's not surprising that nobody showed up, not the buyer or the seller, and there's no evidence of a green card or a certified mail receipt, and they are clearly required to send out under Revised Code 5715.19c notice by certified mail 10 days prior to the hearing. That's what's in the record in this case.
Is your argument that Mr. Rich put the Arizona address on the original complaint, is that your strongest position?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Look at the deed and look at the conveyance fee statement. That served as the basis for their case.
Does the statute say that it should go to a deed address, a deeded address?
If you look at Revised Code 319.20. The county auditor, in preparing the tax duplicate, is required to list the address of the grantee. So when this property transferred on December 29th of 2003, the county auditor under 31920 was required. They see that conveyance fee statement, they have to stamp the deed, and that triggers, and that's why the deed says
then the
tax
error wasn't
address.
With the complainant, but it was with the auditor. Is that your argument?
Pardon me?
I say if the duty is with the auditor to use the address of the grantee, then your argument isn't with the complainant in using the Arizona address, it's with the auditor in not utilizing the address specified in Revised Code 319.
Well, Your Honor, the auditor, as we've discussed, is required for sending out the notices, but the school board is the one that started this action. And I made reference in our brief to Civil Rule 4.6E. Every complainant is responsible to make sure that proper service is given.
But you can and Mr. continue Rich to could jump around the between the rules and the statutes and the forms. All I'm trying to do is understand your argument.
Right.
Is it that the complainant used the Arizona address, or is it that the auditor failed to use the grantee's address? Which is it?
It's they're linked, Your Honor.
It's both.
The reason why, the county auditor, when they got Mr. Rich's complaint, saw e-property tax. And for some reason, the website had not been updated to show what was in the deed and conveyance fee statement. And the court says you rely, that was that Cincinnati case where you rely on the internet at your peril. It's the deed and the conveyance fee statement that control. So the auditor looks at the complaint, it says e-property tax, they look at their website and they see e-property tax. Nobody caught this until, the following year in June when they said, geez, the deed and the conveyance fee statement show this New York address. And that's when the notices start going to my client.
What significance should we give to the fact that the notice went to Arizona, but the request for a continuance came from the New York address?
Well, I think it points to the, the reason why it's important to get it right the first time is because, we were fortunate. It didn't help us at the end of the day. We were fortunate that the seller was kind enough to forward the erroneous notice. But when we sent in a letter, we said, please reschedule the case. But then we go back to, the county auditor has got to reschedule the case. They looked at the complaint. I don't know what the website showed at the time that they rescheduled it, but nobody was looking at the deed and conveyance fee statement. And our position is this all could have been avoided if the complaint was prepared consistent with the deed and the conveyance fee statement information that provided the basis for the complaint.
Thank you.
And we're not, my last point is, and I realize.
Argument anyway is there's no proof that anybody got service in September.
You're right. The only thing that we know went out certified mail in this case were the decisions, the initial erroneous decision and the subsequent one that I appealed to the Board of Tax Appeals on behalf of the appellant. I think it's important for the court to understand we are not asking the school boards or the county auditor to do anything that civil litigants in this state do every single day, is make sure you've got the correct address, because under Civil Rule 4, if you don't get service, the case doesn't go anywhere.
Now, the problem is that the statute, point 19, as you know, says the auditor shall give notice of each complaint in which is stated blah, blah, blah to each property. There's no direction from the General Assembly as to what address to use. So the auditor, Mr. Rich says the auditor commonly uses one source for an address, and you're saying should have used a different source. Statute doesn't really help us, so
right. And that's
maybe a remand is appropriate here, even though you say you'd be harmed because of the transaction issue.
Well, Your Honor, there are two responses to that. One, the rule that I asked for at the beginning is to use the address of the grantee, and the county auditors are usually right down the hall from the county recorder's office.
Yeah, but that's one county auditor is down
right.
The hall, one's in a different building, and the problem is the statute doesn't give any direction, and so the
right.
Auditor has to decide what address do I use.
Right, but in this particular case, the complaint was based upon a sale of the property, and the documents that served as the basis for the case clearly listed our address. So this is the easiest case out there, because they didn't even have to go and pull the deed or the conveyance fee statement. It was the whole part of the case.
Counsel, I want to focus on the appropriate remedy. Choices being, if we agree with you, remand or dismiss. Are there any cases that would indicate at some point if they don't notify the property owner at the appropriate address, that dismissal is the appropriate course of action?
Well, we talk about the Public Square Tower 1 case, we talk about CEI, and then the Stangem case, but I think the case that's most directly on point is the Cincinnati School District Board of Education case, which the school board did discuss in their brief before the Board of Tax Appeals, but it's 87 Ohio State 3rd 363, and I did make reference to that where the court did not allow the Board of Revision to reopen the hearing to cure the notice defect in that case. And, you know, our facts are kind of similar to that, except we didn't get a rehearing. What we got was the county saying 9 months later, you know, we sent the decision to the wrong address, and so we're going to issue a decision to the correct address, but we didn't get a rehearing.
Okay, I guess what I'm wondering about is the request for the continuance,
right,
coming from your client.
Right.
What does that do to the argument there should be a dismissal?
Well, Your Honor, I don't believe that that changes the appropriate remedy in this case, because it's not clear, other than that cover page notice, which says, you know, a complaint's been filed and the hearing set for, I think they set it for May 11th. It's not clear that Ms. Cawley, who sent the letter in from New York, actually had the complaint, so she could say, oh, they've listed the wrong address. I mean, she got some stuff faxed to her from the seller, and then she sent in the letter, but it's not clear to me that she received the complaint so she could say, oh, they've got the wrong address in here.
Clearly the day of the hearing, there's no notice to your client. And at that point, the auditor was on notice where the appropriate address was, because they had received a communication from New York requesting a continuance. So, but I'm just wondering what the request for the continuance does to all of this. It seems like it undermines your equitable argument, because back in May or whenever this came, somebody at the home office is on notice that there's something may happen to the taxes. That somebody obviously wasn't aware of the contract that said you've got 9 months to lay this over onto the seller.
Well, I think it's reasonable to assume that, you know, when you send a letter in requesting a continuance, that they're going to notify you when the case is rescheduled.
Yeah.
And the problem is I'm assuming that what the county auditor did was go back to the face of the complaint. And again, I don't know at the time that subsequent notice went out what the website looked like, but I really think it's irrelevant. It doesn't matter what the website says, because the statute clearly requires, when there's a transfer, for the county auditor to note the change on the tax duplicate. And I don't know how long a period that takes when a property sells in December of 29th. I assume there's probably a lot of closings year end, so maybe it takes a little longer than normal. I see that my time is over by quite a few minutes, and I thank the board for its time.
Thank you, Mr. Flake. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.
All rise.